You make me feel like dancing.
Let's do this.
What is virtualization?
You're going to learn today.
Innovate like a startup. Deliver like an enterprise.
I hope you're coffeed up and ready because it's going to be a great day.
I know you're going to dig this.
Oh, yeah.
You're listening to the Virtually Speaking Podcast with Pedro Aero and John Nicholson.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Virtually Speaking Podcast, episode number 28. Make that 29. My goodness, they're coming on so fast, John. My name is Pete Fletcher, a.k.a. Pedro Aero, and joining me as always is Mr. John Nicholson. John, how you doing, man?
Feeling like dancing, Pete.
You feeling like dancing? What is it that we're on episode 29, that we're just almost to the...
We have made it so far. We have made it so far. I'm excited. I am profoundly dumbfounded that this little podcast has survived this long. So,
yeah,
and we're getting such epic guests. So
I know, it's crazy. They're getting better and better. Speaking of epic guests, we were talking last week at VMworld, and so many announcements came out last week around vSphere 6.5, and we started talking about, oh, we need to have a vSphere 6.5 episode. Not going to be one episode, apparently, because so many great things came out of 6.5. So it's looking like it's going to be a 4, maybe even 5-part series. Who knows? But we are going to start this week with a security episode, which should be amazing. And who else should we get on a podcast to talk about security but Mr. Mike Foley? So with that, Mike, welcome to the podcast, man.
Hey, what John said reminded me. I want to kind of break out into, you make me feel like dancing.
Wow, we're going to sample that clip and use it aggressively.
I know. Over and over. I know you and are. Over.
I know.
I might even throw some of the real music in the background of it, so it just really sounds like he's, you know, professional.
Well, now you know where my music came from, the 70s.
So, Mike, how was VMworld for you?
Oh, VMworld was awesome. I had a session on vSphere encryption. I had a session on all the new platform security stuff that's coming out. I had a session on logging, all the new 6.5 enhanced logging. I had Meet the Experts and a couple other meetings, and then had a group discussion on platform security. And we talked about that subject that everyone knows that I know so well, VM Escape.
Oh, yeah. And then you were also on your off duty. I saw that you were not only participating in the VMware Code Hackathon, but you also were providing security services for Pat Gelsinger.
Yes. We can't talk about that on the podcast. It's all top secret.
John, I don't know if you saw that picture I sent on Twitter.
Yeah. I saw that.
Mike, we'll put that in the show security
notes.
Guard.
That was taken in an undisclosed location.
Exactly. So a lot of stuff came out of vSphere 6.5, especially around security. Mike, looking forward to talk to you about those. But before we do, why don't you tell our audience a little bit about who you are and what you do at VMware?
Okay. So I've been in the IT industry since about 1980. I started off at Digital, driving a car, delivering stuff, left there 17, 18 years later as a tech marketing engineer. I've been doing the whole tech marketing thing now for quite a number of years. I was at RSA for a while. I was at a startup for a while. And I've been at VMware now for 3.5 years as their tech marketing guy who focuses primarily on vSphere security.
Nice, nice. John, what were you doing in 1980?
That's an awkward question, Pete.
See, Mike and I are about the same age, so I'm kidding. I'm kidding, Mr. Nicholson, because he's the young guy on the call.
Not damn that. Meddling kids.
All right, Scooby-Doo villain.
Yeah. Awesome. All right, Mike, let's do it. Let's talk a little bit about, let's start with VM encryption. Tell me a little bit about what is new in vSphere 6.5 around VM encryption.
Well, before we dive into the whole VM encryption thing, let's talk a little bit about how encryption is done today or attempted to be done and how maybe some other folks are talking about doing encryption. Encryption is one of those things that for many folks is a checkbox item. But, you know, that's okay. That's driven by compliance. They're under PCI or HIPAA or some other thing that says thou shalt encrypt everything.
Sure.
But, you know, the way it's been done traditionally is any number of different ways. I can do it at the array level if the array supports encryption. I can have a software-based array that does encryption. I can do it at the fiber channel bridge. I can do it within the virtual machine, you know, having a pre-boot partition and all that other crap.
Yeah.
You know, there's talk of someone else doing things like BitLocker and putting a virtual TPM into a VM so that you could run BitLocker or DMCrypt if you're running Linux within the virtual machine. All of those are, you know, they might check the box, but from an IT standpoint, they are a royal pain to manage. It means I now have to, I have a whole bunch of what I call security snowflakes. Each one's unique. Everything has to be monitored. If I'm running, you know, BitLocker in one and DMCrypt in Linux and BitLocker in Windows, I'm running multiple encryption solutions and, you know, it's painful from an IT standpoint. Security guy really doesn't care. He just says, go forth and encrypt.
Yeah.
You know? So if you think of that steely-eyed boss from Mr. Robot, that's the security guy. And he's saying, you need to encrypt. Well, how do we make it easy to encrypt? And that's where we're headed.
Yeah, so traditionally, security can be pretty much of an operational nightmare, right? Having different types of encryption to manage, and then also managing it at different levels, right? Whether it's the array, whether it's at the individual virtual machine.
Yeah, it just gets ugly real fast, you know? Especially if you have a disaster setup. How do you recover from all of that? It's like, oh yeah, VMA was done using this type of encryption. VMB was done doing that type of encryption. And I don't know, did that one have the pre-boot encryption, or did that one have the other kind of encryption? It's from an IT standpoint, it's a nightmare. I mean, I'm an IT guy who does security, not a security guy who attempts to do IT.
Sure. Fair enough. What about performances? Are there differences? I'm curious. Is it normally better to do it in one location versus the other?
Yeah, well, you know, the whole performance thing is changing. If you had talked performance 5 or 6 years ago, you'd be talking like array-based encryption with these super special, super duper crypto custom chips, you know? But nowadays, Intel is and AMD as well are putting encryption instructions directly into the CPU. As a matter of fact, they're doing it on a per core basis. So the more cores you have, the more encryption threads you can run. Hmm. And the speed of those is just, oh my God, it's just going through the roof. I mean, current Intel processors are doing somewhere between per core 700 megabytes to a gigabit per second encryption throughput.
Wow.
Using their AES-NI instructions. And going forward, I've seen, you know, slides on the web, not giving away anything, that the encryption performance will be just night and day between what's available today and what's available sometime next year. And so the whole performance encryption thing, people tend to go, what's my performance going to be today? And not what my performance is going to be by the time I actually roll it out.
Well, that's one thing to note. You're right. As previously, we had to use proprietary ASICs in storage arrays. And I think that's actually was one of the last still proprietary ASICs on even some of the later generation VMAXs. You're right. The general processing trend has come that way. And what I'm hearing in the future, FPGAs are really good at encryption, and I've heard rumors of Intel and some of the vendors actually putting FPGAs on die. So that would explain how, you know, we've already got really great performance today, but in the future when we start having both general purpose compute and FPGA, then that's a process that should be accelerated to lightning speed.
Yeah, I'm actually not worried about the performance at the CPU level anymore. Because, as you mentioned, Intel and company are really pushing the boundaries to get native nearline speed of encryption. So encryption at that stage isn't the issue. The result is, can you drive I/O fast enough to do it? And then what's going into that encryption engine? I mean, do you have a virtual machine that's generating a terabyte of data an hour? Can you write a terabyte of data an hour? I mean, it just shifts the performance discussion out of encryption and more into the underlying infrastructure.
Yeah, John has an Active Directory domain controller that's running a SQL database with all of his MP3 files. That's probably one of the few cases that I would imagine would get high I/O. Right, John?
Especially some of those extra really cool MP4s.
Yeah.
Hey, we don't talk about that. That schema or that database.
That's a totally different podcast.
Yes,
that's different. Yeah, that's we talk about that on the other podcast, Pete.
Right.
But from it's interesting, you're right, seeing the standpoint of this. So you've made the case here that the hypervisor is the most logical layer rather than the operating system.
Oh, yeah.
And I mean, previously, you're right, storage arrays would do this, but the problem is it lacked portability. You couldn't move that with the key. So Can you talk a little bit?
It also means those writes are in the clear until it hits the storage array.
Which, the storage networks are not encrypted for the most part today. If you look, I mean, NFS, we now have Kerberos, which is authentication. And
right.
iSCSI has CHAP, which I've often heard referred to as a wet paper bag of security. We're going to have a secret passphrase, and we're going to hope no one ever sniffs that on the wire. That's and we'll have a challenge passphrase. I mean, this is like spycraft from the 1930s.
Okay, so the way this is going to work is you'll need a third-party key manager, right? And one that is called Key Management Interoperability Protocol 1.1. So KMIP 1.1 compliant key manager. And we're working with all the major vendors, you know, the Thales, Vormetrics, SafeNet, HITRUST, and Quintessence Labs and others. We're testing a whole bunch. And that's where the key lives that encrypts the key that you use to do the encryption.
Okay.
So there's two keys in play. And we are going to leverage storage policies to do the encryption. So I'm going to go into vCenter as an IT guy. I'm going to go into vCenter and I'm going to configure my connection to the key manager. And that's all cool. Now I've got my vCenter connected to the key manager. Now I have a virtual machine. And right now it would have to be powered off. I take an existing virtual machine, power it off, and apply the encryption policy on that virtual machine. And what you'll see is a reconfig VM event starting. And what that is it's going ahead and cranking through and encrypting that VMDK. And all of the VM home files.
Okay.
So VMX, disk descriptors, et cetera. All of those files are all encrypted.
Snapshots?
You cannot encrypt a VM with a pre-existing snapshot, but once you've encrypted, you can take your snapshots and those snapshots will be encrypted as well.
Beautiful.
How does the SIOPath work for backups? Will that data be pulled out by VADP fully hydrated or non-encrypted? Or will it encrypted garbage?
If you're running something like VADP or any number of Avamar or whatever, they usually have what's called a proxy VM that snaps the virtual machine and then mounts the parent disk. Only an encrypted VM can mount an encrypted disk. So the proxy VM itself would have to be encrypted so that it can attach the VMDK to itself.
Yeah, and what I'm liking about this is it sounds like that proxy, though, will have full access to the data so it can do its deduplication and compression. Unlike, traditional in-guest encryption to where it's just going to see a bunch of garbage and you'll get awful deduplication ratios. Change block tracking is not going to function properly. So it sounds like backups should perform actually just like they would have before.
So there's actually two things that I'll touch on. Let me finish the backup one and then I'll jump into the on-disk dedupe type story. So the proxy VM mounts the disk and the user account in vCenter that the proxy VM uses that has all the right vCenter permissions to do all these actions, you'll add a new permission called cryptography.directaccess. There's a whole bunch of new roles and permissions. We'll dive into that as well. Now that backup VM has the ability to mount that disk, and when it mounts the disk, it sees the contents of the disk in the clear. Now, it sees it in the clear because all the decryption is happening at the hypervisor level. So it just does its normal file-based backup. Now it's up to the backup solution to then encrypt the backup.
Well, that makes sense. And so the key thing to make sure here is your backup software has its own encryption support, but modern enterprise backup software should do that.
And so, it can see all that data in the clear. It can do whatever it needs to do. Now, the whole thing around dedupe is every single virtual machine will have a unique encryption key by default. So from a dedupe standpoint, if I'm writing those VMs to, some EMC array that does dedupe, each one of those is unique because they're already encrypted by the time it hits the array. The array goes, there's nothing here to dedupe. I don't get it.
Got you. But since they're encrypted with the same key, duplicate data within the VM.
They're not encrypted with the same key. They have unique keys.
Oh, no, I'm saying within a VMDK. So if I have on a file server, someone makes 10 copies of the same file, they would be encrypted. But since it's with the same key, I could pattern match that maybe?
Don't think so.
Okay. Now, can you share keys? Can you choose to? Like you've got a group of VMs that are at the same security level and you want to share keys?
You wouldn't be able to do that via the UI. Via the API, you can do all sorts of stuff. I actually had one customer I talked with a couple of weeks ago. He's running a service, SQL as a service. And each customer has a unique VMDK so that the SQL database for customer A and customer B live on different VMDKs. And he said, can I encrypt them with different keys? I said, sure, via the API. You could even go so far as to connect the customer's key managers. So let's just say Coke and Pepsi. They're always the easy one to talk about. Sure. I'm running Coke and Pepsi on the same infrastructure, and they both set up accounts on their key managers for me. I connect vCenter to both of those key managers, and via the API, I say, in one VM, I have multiple disks. Disk B, I'm going to connect to Coke, and disk C, I'm going to connect to Pepsi.
That is cool.
Yeah.
And this reminds me of TPS, transparent page sharing, how you can set a shared salt for a group of VMs as well.
So
as
if you clone
default.
A VM, it retains the key of the clone, of the parent.
Ah, so that would be a thing to where if you had a base template you're cloning from, everyone would get the same key in that case?
That's correct. You can do, so there's two types of rekey events that you can do. Now, if I could just back up a sec, when I apply the policy, I get a unique encryption key. That key, in turn, is encrypted with a key from the KMS. Okay. So if I want to do what's called a shallow rekey, I'm re-encrypting the encryption key. Follow me?
Yeah. So okay. You're just changing what the key is from the key.
The only thing I'm re-encrypting is a key, not the whole disk.
Yep. Yep.
Right? If for some reason they say, oh, no, we have to do a complete re-encrypt of the disk, you can do that. Obviously, that's going to take a lot longer because now you're going to be doing what's called a deep rekey. And in that case, you're taking the VMDK that's encrypted with the key 1234, and now you're going to rewrite it to have a VMDK that's encrypted with the key 3456.
And I'm guessing you'd have to power off for that.
And you'd have to power off for that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Right. Who knows what the future will bring, but in the current release, that's what you would have to do.
Well, I love the fact that you can do this with VM storage policies now. So does this work with VMFS, with vSAN, with vVols, regardless? I'm just inside of vSphere creating VM storage policies?
You know what? The best part of this, it's completely, not only is it virtual machine agnostic, so it doesn't matter what OS you're running on the virtual machine, because the virtual machine just writes its IOs via its normal SCSI device. The I.O. goes through an I.O. filter on the ESX server, gets encrypted,
yep.
And that I.O. filter lives above the storage layer in the hypervisor. So what gets written to the storage layer is just a whole bunch of bits. They just happen to be encrypted, but storage layer doesn't care about that.
Sure.
Right? Neither does Honey Badger. And so all of those I.O.s can get written to any data store, NFS, iSCSI, block storage, even vSAN. Now, one of the things that Yang Bing talked about at VMworld last week was they are talking about a beta for vSAN that does encryption. Now, that's data store encryption. Technically, you could actually have an encrypted VM living on an encrypted data store. It would be double encrypted.
Yeah.
Wouldn't be the ideal choice, but it's completely data store agnostic as well.
That makes sense to me.
Yeah, yeah. That does. Well, I like it. So from policies, Pete, we can now determine performance. We can determine availability. We can determine data resiliency. And we can determine security. That's a lot of value within that policy engine.
Oh yeah.
And you know what's really cool from an IT standpoint, to kind of loop this all back around to ease of management? It's like one Power CLI command to encrypt a VM. I just set the policy on it.
That's beautiful. One Power CLI commandlet or just one click inside of a VM storage policy?
Yeah. I mean, I can select a bunch of VMs in the UI, right-click on them, apply storage policy, and off they go. So long as they're powered off, they'll get encrypted. If you're creating brand new VMs, you create the brand new VM with the storage policy as part of the create new VM action, and the disk is encrypted right off the bat. Oh, and it also works with thin provisioning and thick provisioning, because that's all after the fact.
So what if I have a virtual machine that's encrypted and I want to vMotion that virtual machine?
So there's a new thing called encrypted vMotion. And if your VM is encrypted, there's three settings on a per VM basis. There's disabled, obvious. There's opportunistic, which says if I'm moving from 6.5 to 6.5, it'll be encrypted. But if I'm moving from 6.5 to 6.0, it'll be unencrypted. And then there's required, which says you can only go from 6.5 to 6.5. If your VM is encrypted, you can only move it to another 6.5 system.
That makes sense.
Right.
Previously, I mean, if you think about it, as we mentioned, you know, when you only had disk storage array encryption, there were a lot of places where the VM was in flight and could be exposed. And so now we've got, you know, with vMotion, which is very sensitive. I mean, memory, there's a lot of, you know, very valuable data that lives in memory from a security perspective. So if you can encrypt that memory synchronization, I mean, that's really the holy grail of cutting down the last potential, you know, attack point against VMs. That's
and you don't even have to encrypt the network itself.
Yeah.
Because it's all done on a per VM basis. So when I right click on a VM that has, say, required set, vCenter generates a one-time use 256-bit key and a 64-bit nonce, which is, you know, a random number to toss in with the key. And then it sends those to both hosts that are part of the vMotion network. And then all of the data going through, every single chunk of data, is encrypted with the key plus the next nonce. And then the receiving system has not only the nonce, but the key, and can decrypt that.
Well, first of all, I like that we're learning new words like nonce, but I like the one-time use effect of this, because it prevents any type of easy replay attack or other concerns. And the other traditional way you would solve this, I guess, would have been IPsec, which was always a painful to configure. And it was based on a fixed shared secret that if it was ever, you know, hijacked or stolen, the entire system's, you know, value of security just completely fell apart.
Right. And so think of this from the standpoint of those folks that would be running a vSphere instance in a cloud-based setup like IBM or AWS or something like that. They can get encrypted vMotion without having to go to the cloud vendor and say, I need you to set up an encrypted network.
Well, and even better, even if the cloud vendor had set up that encrypted network or that encrypted IPsec, the cloud vendor would have been holding the keys. It would have been on their hosts.
Right.
For that IPsec. Right. This way, your VM can go to the cloud, but you still control the security. Right. At no point is the memory exposed. At no point is the storage I/O exposed. And if that host is cut off, if someone hostily seizes that cloud vendor or tries to do something with that data, if they don't have access to your key server back in your data center, they're not going anywhere.
Exactly. So one of the big threats that people always have been bringing up is the fear of walking out the door with a VM. You know, it used to be the fear of getting a credit card. And then it was the fear of getting the data, like personal data, like a database of PII, personal information. Now the threat is someone walking out the door somehow with all of my VMs, which comprise an application. Because now you're not only getting the data, you're getting all the intellectual property.
That's a good point.
And with the new way we are managing virtual machines in vCenter, there's a new role called the no crypto admin role. And the full administrator has all those abilities to encrypt and decrypt and copy encrypted VMs off a data store. The no crypto admin, which is what 95% of your admins should be moved to in this environment. The no crypto admin has no cryptography permissions, so he cannot encrypt or decrypt or change keys or anything like that.
Nice.
He can still do power on, power off, vMotion, all those typical admin actions, but he also has no access to the console of an encrypted VM, and he has no access to the encrypted VMDKs and files of that VM. So if he connects to the data store, he can see the folder that the VM lives in. He'll see the file names, but he won't be able to download anything.
Yeah. Wow. That is
so that sharp. Whole scenario of someone walking off is mitigated in multiple ways. He doesn't have the permission to get at the files. Even if he was to get at the files with the new say he was a full admin with the new enhanced logging, you would have a log of exactly what he copied and where to. And then if he goes to his home lab or to a competitor lab or something like that and tries to boot that VM, he can't boot that VM because he doesn't have access to the key manager.
Yep.
So from a defense in depth, it fails closed each time.
Gotta love it. Gotta love it. One more question about the vMotion part. I want to make sure I get this.
Sure.
So if I have a VM that's not encrypted, I do have the VM encryption selected, like required, but the virtual machine itself doesn't have encryption enabled. If I
the data that's vMotioned will be encrypted.
Okay.
Well, that makes sense because, I mean, you might have you might not be doing the full data at rest encryption out of, but say a domain controller where the memory contents there can potentially expose security passwords. You might want to make sure those VMs or anything that's in your authentication chain always has encryption.
Yeah.
For vMotion.
Yeah, for vMotion.
Yeah. Yeah. And as a matter of fact, that's just about five lines of PowerShell to enable that setting because it's on a per VM basis. So I can do for all VMs, set encrypted vMotion to be required. Easy.
Is that script on your GitHub yet?
It will be soon enough.
All right. We're going to hold you to that.
Yep. GitHub.com/Mike Foley.
Cool. All right. So that's VM encryption. I think, man, that's a huge, huge enhancement for 6.5. What else came out in 6.5 around security?
There is secure boot for ESX and secure boot for VMs and the new enhanced logging.
Okay.
So secure boot looks interesting. You know, I saw that as we've been making the shift towards UEFI, this was supposed to be added to all the operating systems. Can you talk a little bit about what our implementation does with that?
Yeah. So if you look at the way UEFI works, your bootloader files in your kernel in say your Windows desktop are digitally signed, and they're digitally signed against a certificate, they're chained to a digital certificate that is in the UEFI firmware. And the UEFI firmware is smart enough to be able to go look at those components and validate that they haven't been tampered with. If they've been tampered, then the signature changes. It doesn't chain to the cert that's in the firmware. You know, failed boot.
Yep.
Okay, we're cool there. We did that for ESX. Now we're going to take it one step further. The first process that ESX is going to run after everything's been validated and the kernel's up is a secure boot verifier. And what that's going to do is it's going to check the digital signature of every single VIB in the ESXi system. And if you remember, when ESXi boots, it creates a file system, and the file system points to the contents of each digitally signed VIB.
Yep.
So rather than digitally signing, you know, we'll say 1,000 files, I'm going to digitally sign 100 VIBs. So from a boot time perspective, I'm not having to validate every single file. I'm only having to validate the package that they're in because we never open the package for write. We only read the package.
Oh, okay. So that significantly reduces the amount of touches that I need to make to get to the boot process.
Yeah, that's just exactly. A quick streaming read across all the VIBs to make sure.
And exactly.
One question I did have here, if I can understand the value of this, is going to do a couple things. One, make sure no one has obviously installed any hostile VIBs.
Exactly. It won't boot if secure boot is turned on.
The other thing is also, I've had cases in the past where I've had I was using a cheap SD card and I actually had an install get corrupt. This would catch corruption of the binaries, right?
Sure. Because they wouldn't validate.
So that's interesting. Now, I did have a question. What about third-party VIBs? I know some people out there, we have some partners who we've signed their VIBs and that's fully supported. There's also third-party VIBs that are basically, you know, unsigned. Unsigned. What would you have to do to make those work?
You'd have to turn secure boot off.
Okay.
Right. So at that stage, it now becomes a security policy that you're going to work out with your security team. And if you're going to be testing stuff, it's usually not in production anyway. Or if it is, you're going to have to get a waiver that says, I need to run these components that are digitally not signed until such time as they are. Now, you could also push back and say to the vendors, no, even though it's beta, it needs to be signed because that's my policy.
Yeah, get it signed.
Right? Get it signed. You have the capability. You can sign it when it ships. So really, it gets down not necessarily to a technical issue, but more of a people and process issue.
I agree with that.
No, that makes sense. And that makes sure you know everything has been, you know, blessed, so to speak, and you know its appropriate support level. So
yeah. And you know, like that fling that we put out for the federal folks to change some files on the ESX server to meet their level of STIG compliance, that fling is digitally signed by VMware and will continue to work in this environment.
You know, it's funny you mentioned federal, and when I think of traditionally encryption and these types of processes, I think about, you know, these massive STIGs and all this stuff, lots of little settings that have to be changed. What I'm liking from, you know, not just the secure boot, but also the VM encrypt, is the simplicity of this, of implementing. This is not something that I'm going to have a dedicated guy go configure. This is just one extra checkbox here or there within my, or, you know, a short PowerCLI script within my workflow as a VMware administrator.
Right. So, you know, obviously we have less hosts than we do VMs. So we can handle the hosts because we're going to have to go to each host to enable secure boot, probably password protect the firmware so no one can invalidate it. And now we're assured that ESX is going to boot cryptographically clean, right? And now what's the next step? That's secure boot for virtual machines.
Yeah, which I would imagine would probably, you'd probably have more unsigned drivers issues with virtual machines than you would have actually code that's not digitally signed.
On the host, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you have the EFI firmware enabled on a virtual machine, you can do that today. Right underneath that will be a checkbox to enable secure boot. Now, if you remember in the EFI firmware, there's digital certificates that the EFI firmware uses to validate kernels and bootloaders. Mm-hmm. In the EFI firmware for virtual machines, there's digital certificates to validate Windows, to validate Linux. And oh, by the way, to validate nested 6.5 ESX servers. So I actually did a demo. I needed to kill two birds with one stone, and I didn't have access to bare metal hardware to play around with Secure Boot. So what I ended up doing on my 6.0 Update 2 lab was I created a nested 6.5 instance, and then on top of that, I created another nested 6.5 instance. That way, from the first nested 6.5 instance, I could enable secure boot on an ESX server, and then I could record my demo and go through it that way. It's multiple levels of security inception.
Yeah, exactly. I'm hearing the soundtrack already of the...
I'm trying to find something to spin. It's a per VM setting, which you can set with PowerShell. And just enabling secure boot, and you can boot up your Windows and Linux systems and that have secure boot built in, and off you go.
This sounds like this is an added step that should get added to everyone's checklist on how to build a VM template.
Yeah, yeah, certainly for the more modern operating systems, yeah. Because now you're assured that when that VM boots, the kernel of that operating system is going to boot cleanly.
Yep, sounds like something that should be inside a hardening guide or something.
Actually, if you look at the way I changed the hardening guide in 6.0, that is really more of a practice than it is thou shalt do it. Because if I put thou shalt do it, then security teams will be saying, why can't I turn on secure boot on my Windows XP system?
Fair enough.
You know,
I love that you're appropriately capturing my impressions of the competence, infrastructure confidence of many security people. So, or my perceptions, which I should be careful about insulting security people. I'm in New Orleans and RSA Con is going on right now. So probably half the people in this hotel are security professionals, but.
And probably most of them already know me and will roll their eyes.
Can you ask them when RSA is going to have biometric acceptance so I don't have to constantly put in my manual keys to authenticate?
Ooh, I actually saw someone tweet something like that the other day, and I responded back with, okay, so when do I get Touch ID for my secure ID token?
Yes.
My favorite two-factor is what Google's done, and a couple other people have this. Tor, it's a push-based system. So I sign in, I log in, enter my password on a website, and then I get a notification on my phone, and it says, are you trying to log in here? And you just click yes.
I'm not a fan of that. What I actually use is Google Authenticator, but I don't use the Google Authenticator app anymore. I use 1Password, and in 1Password, for every login, you can add a one-time password code. So what it does is say I log into Google, I enable two-step authentication, it brings up the QR code for your Google Authenticator, I open up 1Password, open up that login, say add new one-time password, and the camera comes up and I snap the photo with that QR code. Now my 1Password is my Google Authenticator. And that also means that it's now synchronized on my iPhone, my iPad, my iMac, and my Windows box. So regardless of where I am, I can do two-factor auth into anything so long as I do a one-time auth into 1Password.
It's the future.
Well, and that protects you from getting your phone stolen, right, Jace McCarty?
Exactly, right? let's just say my name is Jace and I get my phone stolen and I now have no access to my VMs. Well, if I could go back to my hotel room, log into my Mac and open up 1Password, now I can get access to anything that is multi-factor off.
You heard it here, Jace.
I don't know this Jace guy. I was just picking.
We're giving
the name
him a hard time. He's one of our teammates at VMworld in Barcelona. He was at VMworld Barcelona for 10 minutes and had his iPhone stolen on the Ramblas.
Poor guy.
This is why you always carry a spare, Android burner phone. So
yeah, John, being the good Boy Scout, had an extra phone and he was able to at least give him a phone while he was there. But anyway, we digress.
Yeah. So I think we're cool on secure boot, and then probably the next thing is all the new logging.
Yeah.
Log absolutely. All the things.
Log all things. So if you look at logs that come out of vSphere today, they are really oriented towards GSS troubleshooting. They're really not oriented towards IT and security operations. What we've done is completely changed the output coming out of vCenter. So vCenter outputs syslog from the VCSA. You shall not be using Windows anymore. Migrate to the VCSA, says Ahmad. So you've got syslog coming out, and what we're putting into the syslog stream are the vCenter events. So if I move, say I'm on 6.0 and I move a virtual machine from the PCI network to the non-PCI network, the only thing I get is Mike Foley reconfigured virtual machine. Okay, yep. You know, what is a solution like LogInsight or Splunk do with that?
Not much.
Everyone, you know, anyone who doesn't really understand the products go, oh, well, I'm sure Splunk could do something with that. Like, no, maybe just set up an alert to say Mike Foley did something. Doesn't say what he did.
You know, I've had some admins that I've worked with in the past that alone would have been useful, just knowing that they've touched something, because then I could appropriately panic and try to remediate it. So,
well, in 6.5, you'll get what changed. So, for example, in the example I just used, you would get a log message that said, this VM moved from this network switch to that network switch, or Mike Foley attempted to downloaded a VMDK off a data store.
Oh, wow. That's pretty granular.
This is going to get some people fired, Mike. I mean, there's going to actually be accountability in operations now.
Well, you know what's really cool is you're also getting all sorts of other information. So it's not just security stuff. It's IT operations. Let's say, for example, your process of building a virtual machine, you know, you've got a whole bunch of people who build virtual machines, and Bob does it one way and Harry does it the other way, but you really don't know because you only see the final product. Now you're going to get logs that say Harry built a virtual machine, and then right after he built the virtual machine, he went from 2 CPUs to 4 CPUs. He went from 1 gig to 8 gig of memory, and then he added a VMDK. And he's doing that on a regular basis. Now you can start to chart how many times have CPUs been added to virtual machines? How many times has memory been added to virtual machines? So in LogInsight, you would be able to create charts that show you stuff like that over time. And you'd be able to look at that and go, visually look at it and go, our process is broken. Every time we create a VM, we always create it with 2 CPUs and then add 2 more.
Yeah, I see that.
Right? So from an IT operations standpoint, it adds a whole bunch of value.
That's pretty cool. So you like know, even if you change policies.
Why not fix the stuff up front rather than do stuff after? Because if you fix it up front and do it once, then you're less likely to screw it up after. But if you do it one way and then apply a whole bunch of stuff afterwards all by hand because you don't know PowerShell, the opportunity for misconfiguration happens. And misconfiguration is your biggest threat.
Sure.
In security.
So is there like a list of all the different new logging fields that they now capture?
I think we're going to have a list in the documentation, but it's essentially almost everything in a VM reconfigure. It's a whole bunch of other things. I showed a demo in my session, and I'm going to post the demo at some point, where I wrote a PowerShell script that went ahead and just did a whole bunch of different actions against a VM and then against a vSphere instance.
All right.
And stuff like create new data center, create new cluster, enable HA and DRS, all of those things all get recorded.
Change a storage policy.
Changing a storage policy. Oh, how about creating a new role and then assigning the encrypt permission to that role?
Ooh, you're fired.
Bingo. Right. So it, you know, we talked about maybe dialing back the permissions for all your admins to no crypto admin and only having one or two accounts that are full administrator. And maybe John and Pete's the security guy, John's the IT guy, and there's only one full admin account. And in order to log into that, John gets his half of the password and Pete gets his half of the password.
Well, and more importantly, any actions that are taken by that account or any login immediately sends an email for, and lights up a dashboard on LogInsight.
So the SOC knows what's going on. Log of everything that changed.
Yep.
I like it. I've heard you call this actionable logging. Is that a true term?
Yeah.
I mean, it makes sense.
Yeah, so it's really an enablement for the stuff that receives the logs. So think of what you can do from a log insight or other logging solution standpoint. Now you're getting really rich data. So you could add smart into a logging solution that parses that data and says, you know, back to my PCI example, you know, where you have to be PCI compliant. If that VM moves from PCI to non-PCI, or a VM moves into the PCI thing, it now is in scope for PCI.
Yeah.
You could even go so far as to have Log Insight look for any changes to a VM that happens within the moving into a PCI environment, and then say, kick off a workflow that asks someone, is that the right thing to do? And then if it's not, go quarantine that VM and anything else that that VM has touched, and then go dump a whole set of logs and send it to the security guy. Imagine the scenario where you have a virtual machine that's under PCI compliance,
yep,
and moves into a network that's not in PCI compliance. You're getting that level of data going into a logging solution. So that logging solution could create custom alerts that kick off scripts that go do further actions.
Yeah.
Right. So not only are you informing people that Mike moved a virtual machine out of PCI compliance, but maybe you could then kick off a script that says to NSX, go quarantine that VM and then get logs of anything that VM might have touched in that environment. It's such an enabler. I don't see a huge number of people going after it, but for those people that need it, it really could end up pretty huge.
Oh yeah. And that compared to your VM has been reconfigured. I mean,
yeah,
that is pretty much, thank you so much for telling me that information that I cannot use.
Exactly. Yeah. What's Mike's phone number? I don't know.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I've got some VMs that they're just vMotioning all over the place. I'm worried they're going to escape, you know, they're going to escape and just run out down the street.
Oh, man, you had to bring up VM escape.
So
is this like escape gate? No, this is not the same thing. Sorry, continue.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, anybody that follows me on Twitter knows anytime I see something around VM escape, I just kind of roll my eyes and post something. Oh, look, someone asked me about VM escape. My week is complete. VM escape is extremely hard to do. And for those that don't know what a VM escape is, it's getting malware onto a virtual machine, breaking down through the virtual machine into the hypervisor, and getting to the point where you can actually do damage within the hypervisor. Now, in order to do that, it's extremely difficult. And we're making it even more difficult in 6.5. And this is something, you know, I'll mention. I'm not going to go into a whole lot of detail. There's no particular threat out there or anything like that. It's just we looked at the ESXi architecture like we always do in every release. We always make architectural changes. We looked and said, what can we do a little bit better? What can we do to give Mike some ammo to get the VM escape monkey off his back? And what we're doing in 6.5, and you'll find this when you start poking around in ESXi, there's some configuration files which you should not touch. And we are sandboxing what's called the VMX process. So if you look at ESX from a very high level, it's an operating system. Every virtual machine is a process, essentially a process.
Yep.
The VM escape thought process by security people who don't understand hypervisors is you'd break into the virtual machine, you'd get root on the virtual machine, install a driver on the virtual machine, and then that driver starts to attack that VMX process. Well, that VMX process really only presents to you a virtualized x86 CPU. So all you can do is speak x86 instructions and interrupts. A whole lot. Not a whole lot you can actually do. But let's just say that you are, you know, super duper smart and Dr. Evil hires you to go do this to get $1 million from somebody. And let's just say you were so smart, smarter than the five or six people that actually know how it all works, and you were able to do something. Well, that VMX process in 6.5 will be in a sandbox, a non-root sandbox. You won't be able to get even out of that process.
Okay.
Now, so there's not even a general user space. They're just in your own little sandbox.
Well, let me also say that the VMX process runs in ring 3, not in ring 0. So even if you were able to do something, you wouldn't be able to do something. You can't break out into a shell.
And this changed with 6.5.
Yeah, so this will be in 6.5. You won't see a whole lot about it, maybe just whatever I blog about. It's just an architectural change. It's just one of those things we looked at and said, we can do that. And it's just part of the whole ESXi architecture growing and evolving. And, you know, like you brought up the transparent page sharing thing, we disabled that not because there was a specific threat, but because the cost of doing that from a performance standpoint was less and less as we had more systems with more memory. And the benefit of something possibly happening in the future would mitigate that. And we've already seen some of that in the past 6 months where there's been page sharing stuff, and you'll see a line in a report saying, yeah, but VMware turned off transparent page sharing, so they're not vulnerable.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of attacks on other, you know, hypervisors that shall remain nameless. And that seems to be a continual black eye that they keep getting hit with. And we were, you know, proactive as well as having a better implementation. The fact that you can salt groups of VMs together, it's just, it seems like we've taken a much more mature stance, I guess, on this.
Yeah, I mean, that you said it right there, that hit the nail on the head with the word proactive. We're just being proactive, getting ahead of any sort of possible curve. But, you know, one thing to remember, the whole VM escape thing, you know, if you did get to the point where you're pounding on the x86 instructions and interrupts, that's like you walking into a minefield blindfolded. And if you hit the wrong spot, something blows up and a crash would happen.
Where and then the EFI crash? Secure boot will right. verify it's
where, everything. Where does that crash go? To GSS. Locked.
Yeah.
They look at it and they go, we have no idea what this is. Where does it then go? To Kevin Christopher and company. They would look at that and they would be, if they were seeing a whole series of these weirdo crashes, that would be their canary in the coal mine. That would say, oh, there's like a large level, maybe possibly nation state level yep. attack thing going on across, you know, multiple banks or something like that.
Yeah, that makes sense.
We're not seeing any of that.
Well, just in case, Pete, I'm going to go ahead and upgrade our lab to 6.5 this weekend.
Please do.
Because I'm worried about the North Koreans getting in and getting access to my MP4s stored on that SQL database. And, you know.
Yeah, I'm just worried about Ahmad.
Also, Ahmad, we need to build a firewall and make him pay for it. But, you know, that's.
Okay, yeah. I think you just trumped me.
Yeah, because, you know, if you do upgrade our vSphere, you might want to.
I agree to VCSA, you should.
You know?
You've been hovering on that.
I agree to VCSA, you should.
Absolutely.
Well, I mean, from a security standpoint, that's another thing that I like that we haven't talked about, but the move to Photon for VCSA.
Oh, yeah.
It should make patching much faster and reaction standpoint.
Actually, I mean, was in a meeting this morning about that.
Oh, man.
Right? So one of the things, and I've explained this to types of customers who shall not be named, when we were talking about doing this, and they were like, absolutely. Because now VMware owns the whole stack. We own the OS, which is very, very tiny.
Yep.
So the attack surface is very tiny. We own the whole OS and the application all the way soup to nuts. And whereas before, we were basing the OS on SLES, which is a great operating system. But what ended up happening for us was folks who are running SLES in their own environment would see updates, and then they'd turn to us and go, where's your updates? Well, the updates had to come out of SLES into engineering, go through the whole qualification point, and then finally make it out on the next release train or the next update train.
Yeah.
And those trains didn't run frequently enough.
No.
Right. So now what it's going to be is probably more of a regular cadence. I don't know what that cadence will be just yet. We're working through all of that, but we'll own all that. We have essentially Linux OS developers who are developing Photon, and they will be working with the vCenter team to make sure everything works together, and you'll be seeing that change over the course of the next year or so. But we own all the soup to nuts on that, and I'll tell you, Photon, I think you're going to be really impressed with a few things. I can't go into any more detail than that.
Don't worry. We got Kit Colbert coming on in a couple of weeks, and he's going to share all the goodness. I can't wait.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I think something I saw yesterday that Kyle Ruddy posted on our private Slack was like, oh, that is so cool.
Oh, yeah. Well, cool, man. Quick recap. VM encryption on vSphere 6.5, vMotion encryption, ESXi secure boot, virtual machine secure boot, enhanced logging, which I like that you have now renamed actionable logging, I think, which is fantastic. All this, all in vSphere 6.5.
Architectural changes at the hypervisor level for to make Mike happy in a VM escape situation.
And VM escape, absolutely.
We're keeping it locked down in Ring 3. So you heard it here, folks.
This podcast lives in Ring 3.
I love it. That is awesome. Mike, thanks for coming on. How can people find you in this social world? I know you're on Twitter.
Yep, I'm on the Twitters and the web, the interwebs. So Twitter, you can reach me at Mike Foley. That should be easy to find. My VMware account is at vSphere Security. If you don't want to listen to my rantings over some of the political machinations going on in this country, then follow at vSphere Security and you'll get just the facts.
Nice.
You can find me on my personal blog at www.yelof, which is Foley spelled backwards, .com. And in there, you can find some pretty interesting stories, like my dinner with Kevin Mitnick a few years ago. That makes for a pretty entertaining read, seeing as how he had hacked my systems back in 1987.
Nice.
You know, when John was still in diapers.
Right.
And then follow me on the vSphere blogs. Just search for Foley there and you'll find me there.
Absolutely. And we'll be sure to leave links to some of the blogs that you've written recently on like what's new in vSphere 6.5 security and maybe some of the other demos that you've got coming on. So we'll definitely share those on the show notes of this post. John, get anything else for Mike before we take off?
That's it. That's it. You know, before we go to the underground podcast.
Absolutely. Moving on to the secret podcast that we can't talk about here. So all right, well, that music tells me it's time to go. And so if you want to get in touch with us, send us an email at podcast@vmware.com. Subscribe to us on SoundCloud and iTunes by searching Virtually Speaking Podcast. You can catch this and all episodes at vspeakingpodcast.com. Next week, we're going to do more vSphere with Brian Graff talking some HA and DRS. And so until then, bye for now. Mike, that was awesome, buddy. Thanks for coming on.
You guys validate my parking?
Hey, hey. What kind of establishment do you think we run here?
A very secure one.
We made him park across the street, right? Like, we're not going to let him use our parking garage.
No, I'm stuck out here in shed quarters.
We didn't want him to VM escape.
I did have a couple questions for him for the... you know, the thing.
The secret podcast.
You make me feel like dancing. I feel
like dancing. Woohoo! Dancing. Woo! Oh, yeah.
Woohoo!
Enough of this jibber jabber.